Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Shavuos is coming up. There is a long-standing minhag among the Jewish people that on Shavuos we eat milcheks. So we felt that it was an appropriate time tonight to discuss whether it is permitted to eat milcheks on Shavuos. Now, we're not discussing whether it's permitted because on Yontav you're supposed to eat meat for Simchas Yom Tov. No. We're discussing whether all milk products in the world today are treif as veal. That's basically our discussion tonight. You probably know that Rav Herschel Schechter, who lives down the street, Baruch Hashem, so Rav Schechter is machmir that he no longer eats any milk products. The rationale for that is what we're going to discuss tonight. But basically, the story begins a number of years ago. Rav Schechter traveled to Johannesburg, South Africa. And when he was in Johannesburg, he was speaking to some people who worked there in Kashrus in South Africa, and they told him, by the way, you should know that cows, at the end of their life, we shech them. You know, a cow is producing milk for years and years and years, and then at the end of the cow's milk production, so they slaughter the cows. So far, there's nothing novel or interesting. But they said that when they slaughtered the cows, they found an unbelievably high rate of treifos. A treifa is a deformity in the animal's body, the type of deformity that the halacha says renders the animal non-kosher. The shochet in South Africa, who was speaking to Rav Schechter, said that when they shecht these milk cows at the end of their life, they find that 95% of the cows have some sort of adhesions on the lung, some sort of treifos. Now, that is a serious problem, no? But that's a very high number. And if I know that 95% of the cows are non-kosher at the end of their life, so then I really have to call into question whether the cow's milk is kosher, because like we've mentioned a few times, and we'll see again in a few minutes, milk that comes from a non-kosher animal, if milk comes from a sow, the milk is treif. If milk comes from a cow, but the cow is treif, the milk is treif. So if 95% of these cows are slaughtered and they have a treifa, so that should mean that perhaps the milk is also treif. This is the problem. Now, Rav Schechter didn't want to believe exactly what this one shochet in South Africa said. So he comes back to the States and he spoke to people who speak like our type of English. And he asked, he said, hey, what's going on? Like, when you shecht the cows at the end of their milk-producing career, so tell me, well, what's the story with those cows? Is it 95% treif? They say, oh no, not 95%, 80%. That's very bad. As if 80% of these cows are going to be non-kosher at the end of their life, so this calls into serious question whether it is permitted to drink milk, to eat cheese, to have any dairy product, because we don't know, right? We do know that a very high number of them are non-kosher at the end of their life, right? At what point they became non-kosher? Questions, right? A lot of questions have to be asked, and this is why for a few years ago, in the year 2007, the Journal of Halachic Contemporary Society published an article called The Kashrut of Commercially Sold Milk. It's written by a friend of mine, Rabbi Michal Zilber, and much of what we're saying tonight is going to be coming from his article. We will be discussing this issue now. David, you got a comment? Okay, so that is the introduction. So let's just learn some of the sources quickly. The Gemara tells us in Bechoros, right, that we have a pasuk of Gamal that teaches me, or Es HaGamal, that teaches me that the milk of a non-kosher animal. Now here, when I speak about a non-kosher animal, I mean an animal that is a non-kosher species of animal. So the Gemara writes, Taima derabbanan mi gamal gamal. And Reb Shimon learns from Es HaGamal. In other words, they are both saying that the milk of a camel is non-kosher. The question is, which verse, which pasuk in the Torah teaches me that? The Gemara then asks, Halav hachi havamina cholav behima tameya will be permitted. Well, why would I have possibly thought that the milk of a non-kosher animal would be permitted? How come I need a pasuk to tell me that the milk of a non-kosher animal is forbidden? Right? Ma'ishna mehodetanya hatmein lesar tziran v'ropfun v'kipa shalahen. Basically, the juice that comes out of non-kosher things is non-kosher. So why would I possibly think that the milk that comes from a non-kosher animal would be kosher? So the Gemara answer is an interesting answer. Itzra. Salka daita chamina holds a behema tahora nami chedeshu. The amamar dam ne'ekar v'na'ase cholav. You see, there's a concept in halacha called a chiddush. A chiddush basically means something that contradicts all the rules. Says the Gemara, milk is a chiddush. It contradicts all the rules. Because how is milk created? So, in the Gemara, there's an opinion that we're learning right now, which I cannot explain to you based on anything in the real world. The opinion says, "Dam ne'ekar v'na'ase cholav," that the blood in the body gets darkened, right? It changes, it transforms, and that blood becomes milk, right? Isn't that the way you make milk? I remember as a kid, there used to be like the Hershey's ad about chocolate milk comes from a chocolate cow on a chocolate farm, etc. So they didn't mention that the chocolate cow has chocolate blood, and hence you get chocolate milk. Because milk comes from blood, says the Gemara, right? You know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Chocolate cow on the Hershey's farm. So the Gemara says, one second, if blood becomes milk, blood is treif, milk is kosher, right? So that means that milk is something that contradicts all of the rules. No? Milk contradicts all the rules, because you can't take something treif and make it into something kosher, yet blood becomes milk. So I would have thought that since milk contradicts all the rules, and the milk of a kosher animal is kosher, even though it comes from blood, I would have thought that the milk of a non-kosher animal is also kosher, so I need a pasuk to tell me that the milk of a non-kosher animal is treif. That's basically what the Gemara in Bechoros is telling me here on Daf Vav Amud Beis. Okay, a little complicated, but the basic idea is that I would have thought that milk of a non-kosher animal is kosher, because why should milk of a kosher animal be kosher? The answer is, I have a pasuk that tells me that milk of a non-kosher animal is treif. Yeah.
What about the vash from a bee?
So the Vashra and Bee, the same Gemara here in Bechoros discusses, how come bee honey is kosher? And the Gemara gives one answer for both Cholav and Dvash. The Pasuk says, Eretz, Zavas, Cholav, Udvash. And if God is praising the land of Israel as being the land of milk and honey, that means that milk is kosher and honey is kosher, because God wouldn't praise the land of Israel based on treif stuff.
Isn't it
honey? What? Yeah, isn't it date honey? So twice that's like kasha. Okay, well, whatever, okay. You know, like, you gotta move your hands a few times and everything is good. Fine. Fine. So now, the Gemara says that the milk from a non-kosher animal is non-kosher, but the Gemara is only talking about milk of a non-kosher species. What about the milk of a kosher species, but a non-kosher animal from a kosher species? For example, an animal that's a treifa. Is that milk kosher or non-kosher? Right? So it says in Shulchan Aruch, that cholav behema chaya tmeya o treifa, the milk of a tamei animal, tamei being like a camel, or a treifa, a milk of an animal that has this deformity, vitsiro me ragleha, right? It's asurim kivsara, basically the milk of a non- kosher animal, the milk of a treif animal, treif in the sense of a deformed kosher species, that milk is forbidden like the meat of the animal. And this is a basic principle, that yotzei from a tame is tame. Anything that leaves a non-kosher animal is considered non-kosher also. The Vilna Gaon says that we know the milk of a animal that's a treifa is a problem. We know that, says the Gra, because the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Tazayin in Chulin has a case of a kosher animal that nurses from a non-kosher animal, and the Gemara discusses whether the milk of the non-kosher animal, when it's inside the, we spoke about making cheese, right? And one of the ways of making cheese is the coagulated milk inside the stomach of the animal, right, could coagulate other milk. So Gemara discusses whether ksheira shiyanka minha shreifa, whether that milk inside the stomach is kosher or non-kosher. You get the impression that if not for the fact that the milk is transformed by the digestion inside the stomach of the animal that nursed, that it would definitely be non-kosher. So you see that milk of a treif animal is treif, end of discussion. So therefore we got a problem. If 95 or even 80% of the animals, when they are slaughtered, are treifos, so it should possibly be genuinely non-kosher. And why? How is it permitted to have the yontif of Shavuos without cheesecake? That's what we have to defend. Yeah. So, but the fact is, when I open them up, I see that 95% or 80% are really treif.
Well, you know, you could isolate that to the ones in Africa.
I could.
After the lifespan.
I could, but you see, usually, how do I know an animal is kosher? Because I assume that most animals don't have treifos, right?
Right.
My general assumption is I follow Rove. And this is really what we're going to be discussing tonight. Rove. But I can't follow Rove if 95% is non-kosher. That's sort of a definitional issue. So by the time I eat the meat, I already checked the animal to make sure it was kosher. But right, remember, they check the lungs.
Is it 95% of our animals when we chef them?
So the animals that they use for meat, you don't have 95%. Because they shecht younger animals, animals that haven't been on the farm for so long, etc. But animals that are used for milk, by the time they slaughter them, 95% are dead, are treif. Now, now you're going to ask a question, one second, right? Well, maybe they were perfectly healthy at some point.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's true, but I don't know for sure anymore. In other words, at some point in the process, if by the time they are slaughtered, 95% is non-kosher, so at some point in the process, it became non-kosher. So what permission do I have to drink this milk, right? Maybe, right? There's a decent likelihood, at least, that it's non-kosher already. Right? So maybe you're going to say that the milk from the first 3 months of milking the cow was okay. But where are you going to draw the line? How do you know how to deal with this? Okay, so we're going to talk about that. Good. Mr. Sidney.
Yeah, I just have to, from an actuarial point of view, I just have to protest the tremendous adverse selection in using only the cows that were slaughtered
okay, good.
At the end of their lives,
okay.
Any sort of representative sample.
So let's go slowly. So now, there is a you see, Shulchan Aruch assumes that most animals are kosher, right? Most animals are kosher. Not only are most animals kosher, the din is that there are 18 deformities that would make an animal non-kosher. The Yud Ches Treifus. We don't check for all 18. We only check for the lungs. That's it. We check to make sure there are no adhesions in the lungs. The adhesions in the lungs apparently come from pneumonia. So if you have a cow that never got pneumonia, there won't be adhesions on the lungs. Okay? So that's a very important reason to keep your cows healthy. But the fact is...
good records of your
cow. The fact is that we don't check the other 17, we only check the lungs, and the reason we explained this in the past is because the halacha is that there's a din derabbanan, there's a rabbinic requirement to check whenever there is a miyut hamatzoi, whenever there is a minority that is likely that it will be a problem, so then we have a rabbinic obligation to check it. Now what does it mean, a likely minority? So there are different approaches. If you were here for bug checking, International Bug Checking Day with Rabbi Eisen in the social hall, so he pointed out there's like three different opinions that he used. Some say 5%, some say 7%, some say 10%, there's some say 15%. There's a lot of different measurements of a miyut hamatzoi. So generally we assume 10%. That means that there is never an obligation to check something if there is less than 10% probability that it's going to be non-kosher. Never, right? So I don't have to check that the membrane of the brain may be split, because in less than 10% of cows is the membrane of the brain split, no need to check. Lungs, there's a 10% likelihood, therefore we check lungs. This isn't only relevant for eating meat, this is relevant for checking for bugs in broccoli, or wherever the vegetable. If there's a 10% likelihood, you gotta check. No 10%, right? Eat to your heart's desire. No?
I've never found any bugs.
Never found any bugs, right, okay. Again, so part of the issue is that you have to know what to look for. Again, I'm not saying that you don't, but it could be, if you buy higher quality produce, it might not be a problem at all. And that's actually one of the things that we'll be discussing as we move on. What?
Key food,
yeah. The Heights, by the way, was ranked as having the worst produce in New York City. Thank you very much.
Worse than Harlem?
Did anybody go to Frank's and buy their produce there?
I think Frank's is probably better than other, at least it looks cleaner than other places in the Heights. But if you buy it in some like Spanish language place in St. Nicholas Avenue, I imagine that you'll have a rat coming out of your finger lettuce or something. I don't know.
It's cheaper.
What? It's cheaper, right?
He's right next to YU, where everybody buys.
Don't know. Now, this is relevant. We're having too much fun here. I don't know. This is relevant for some other areas. Like, do I have to check my suit for shatnez? Well, it depends. If there's a 10% likelihood that it's going to have shatnez, yes. No 10% likelihood, no. Right? Now, where do you draw the line? Right? This is one of the things that we'll be discussing. Do I draw the line and I say, well, you know, a suit from Poland is much more likely to have shatnez than the suit from the United States, which is probably true, right? A suit from Croatia, right? You know, did I draw it based on the country manufacturer, based on the country and the brand? Right? How carefully did I draw that line? This is one of the big questions, but just as a general rule in halacha, we only check if there is a miyut hamatzo, if there's a 10% likelihood. And when it comes to animals, there's only a 10% likelihood by the lungs. Now, there's a huge discussion. Let's say you live in a community that you have not 10% that's going to be a problem with the lungs, but you have 30%, 40%, 50%. 50% of the animals, now again, I'm talking about the old way that milk production used to work. Today we buy milk, and it's, you know, it comes in containers, you buy it at Key Food. But it used to be that the local farmer would milk his cow. Right? That's the standard practice. Let's say in the community where they shech the cows, they find that 50% of the cows, when they shech them, are non-kosher. Is the milk going, are you allowed to drink milk in those communities? So there's a classic literature on this. Rabbi Zilberman in his article really does a very nice job of presenting it. There's a tshuva of the Tiferes Tzvi. The Tiferes Tzvi basically gives a few explanations. One explanation is that it says, whoa, just because by the time, I think this is what David was saying before, right, from an actuarial perspective, right, but just because when I shech the animal, I find that 50% are non-kosher, doesn't mean that 50% of this animal is non-kosher, because the live animals are likely to be healthier than the animals that you're shechting.
Yeah.
Right? Point one. Okay. It's a point that's well taken. Additionally, there are a number of other reasons why I could assume that it's going to be okay.
Age variance.
Right?
Age variance,
and that's very similar to what we were saying before, that as the animal gets older, it's likely to be less healthy, right?
You take younger animals.
So obviously this is all factored in. So that's one reason why they were mako, even in a community that most animals that were shechted are non-kosher, still, they were mako on the milk. Additionally, this issue comes up in Hilchos Yom Tov, no? On Yom Tov, I'm allowed to shecht animals, technically. Most people don't do it. Even in our show where we have a barbecue the second day of Shavuos, we don't begin by shechting an animal. I don't know, we just don't. I guess there's probably something against cold or whatever, not to shecht in the shul. I'm not sure. But we don't do that, so fine. But technically, you're allowed to shecht an animal on Yom Tov, because on Yom Tov, Ochel Nefesh is permitted. Right? Whatever malach I do for food is permitted. Right? That's the halacha of Yom Tov. Well, what about if I live in a town and 50% of the animals are non-kosher? Am I allowed to shot such an animal in Yom Tov? So, it says in the Rishonim, in the Ur Zeruah, no, you can't, right? Because the only heter to shecht an animal in Yontiv is that the animal is going to be ochel nefesh. But if likelihood is the animal is going to be treif, 50% or more is treif, so I can't shecht that animal. Comes along the Shagas Aryeh, the Shagas Aryeh writes a tshuva in 1756, right? And he says, you know what? In my town, most of the animals are non-kosher, but still I allow people to shecht on Yontiv. You know why? Because when we say that it's non-kosher, it's really not technically non-kosher. You see, we have so many chumras, right? This sounds like something you'd read on a blog. No? There's so many chumras out there. And they say, and it's really true. Technically speaking, we basically, even if you don't hold of glatt kosher, right? But still, we have lots and lots of chumras that we throw in. Right? If you hold a glatt kosher, technically speaking, there are many of these adhesions in the lungs that would be kosher. If the adhesion goes this way, not that way, it depends which rib it's connected to. There are all these complicated dinim. So there are many reasons why technically it could be kosher, but we have a chumra natu. Says the Shagas Aryeh, since it's technically kosher, he'll allow you to shecht an animal on yontiv. Again, you can't eat it unless you check the lungs and make sure it's kosher. Like, I can't eat a lung on a Monday. I can't eat an animal on Monday if I don't check the lungs. But we'll allow you to shecht on Yom Tov because I could assume that most animals are kosher. This is what it says in the Shagas Aryeh. They're not mostly kosher? Well, technically they are mostly kosher. We just have chumras to assume that's treif. Yeah. Yes.
I will not, based on my minhag.
Remember, I'm allowed to cook on yontiv because a guest's coming.
But I don't have any guests coming.
You never know. Guests might always come.
I don't.
You live on a desert island. I forgot.
I'm not anticipating that.
Right. Again, technically speaking, if something is only usher based on chumra, you're allowed to do it on yontiv, and it's not. Because ochel, right, it's not a problem of ochel nefesh. That's what the Shagas Aryeh is assuming. I acknowledge that it's a bit of a chiddush in the Shagas Aryeh, but that's what he says. It's in Samach Dalos. Okay? Now, once we're at this point, so we understand why even in communities that most animals were non-kosher, they drank the milk, that was not considered a problem. Moreover, there's the idea, I think Josh mentioned a few minutes ago, of chazaka, no? You see, let's go slowly. Chazaka means a status quo, right? Generally speaking, that's what a chazaka means. This used to be non-kosher, I assume it's still non-kosher. It was kosher yesterday, I assume it still is kosher. That's a chazaka. It's a status quo in the animal. Can I assume that this animal is going to be kosher because there's a chazaka, there's a status quo. The animal was not a treifa when it was born, so it probably is still not a treifa now. Do I have a chazaka to rely on when it comes to this individual animal?
Yeah, the rove.
So I have rove, but remember, I live in a town, let's say, that I don't have rove.
No, I'm saying rove does that.
What?
Rove, that is a treif.
I live in a town that rove and the animals are treif, right? But can I say, yeah, rove and the animals are treif, but maybe this animal, I'll rely on the personal chazaka. Who says this animal is treif? Most animals, I look at most animals in general, and most animals are going to be treif in this town. Agreed. But this one animal, maybe I can assume is still kosher. Now, we got a problem, because in halacha, rove overpowers chazaka, right? Ruba and chazaka, ruba adif. Rove is the majority. The majority of animals are non-kosher. This animal, I have a presumption, it still is kosher, but rove should overcome it. Well, maybe not. Maybe rove only overcomes a chazaka if it's a really strong rove. Right? Again, no one knows where you draw the lines, but I could have a row for 51%. I could have a row for 99%, right? And I could have lots of stuff in between, but that's advanced mathematics. How much between 51 and 99? But the fact is that maybe a strong rove beats a chazaka. A weak rove doesn't. So that's one of the discussions. And there are some. It's a machlokas also in Rishonim. Can you say a chazaka when you have not yet determined the chazaka? Meaning to say, can I have a chazaka when I'm blind? This animal, you want to say that the animal has a chazaka that it's kosher. How do you know? You never made sure the animal was kosher. You never checked its lungs. I never checked the lungs because the animal's alive. I couldn't check the lungs. Maybe there's no such thing as a chazaka on a live animal. So that's a big machlokas Tosfos and Rashba, right? Many assume, and in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Pei Aleph Sif Beis, there's a discussion about this. Many assume that you have a chazaka even on the live animal. Shulchan Aruch assumes that way, unless, right, it depends ultimately what you find. In other words, if I shecht an animal, I find the animal is non-kosher, do I say that the cheese that came from this animal beforehand was now treif, or not? It's a serious problem. Imagine your small farmer, he's got one cow. He's been making cheese all year, no? He shechts poor Elsie, right? They have the funeral. And then they find out that Elsie's a treifa. What about all the cheese that they made from Elsie? Is it now treif? Shulchan Aruch says it depends how was Elsie found to be a treifa. If Elsie was found to be a treifa, the type of treifa that obviously existed since its birth, you found out that it had an extra digit. Instead of five fingers, it had six. Okay. Right, that's not something that developed later, although maybe if you live near Chernobyl, it could. Who knows? Right? Yeah. But that's what.
Other problems.
What?
Then you have other problems.
Yeah. Don't eat the cows near Chernobyl. That's sound advice. Now, if it's the type of treifa, though, that may have come just now, like a split in the membrane of the brain, so then we assume the cheese is definitely kosher. There's some treifas, like on the lungs, that we're not sure. Did it happen a long time ago? Did it just happen now? So the Rambam gives us the three-day rule. Cheese that was made within the last 3 days is treif. The cheese from before 3 days is kosher. Right? So that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. And that basically is the end of the old-fashioned discussion of this topic. The older discussion is a case when I have one cow, one farm, right? I'm not sure is this cheese kosher or non-kosher. I have all the rules in Shulchan Aruch, relatively simple to decide. Josh.
Don't we assume that if an animal could stay alive for a year, that it's not true?
Okay.
So therefore, all the young cows we see stay alive for many years. So all the young
But this is the type of thing I only know in hindsight.
No.
Yeah.
Statistics that 99.9% of one-year-old cows stay alive till 32.
Okay. Right. So, correct. That's a fair point. If I use statistics as my definition of rove, which we'll be discussing in a few minutes, so absolutely, we could make those types of, you'd have a table of all your cows and what age and when they, right? And I'm sure you could put together such a table of cow ages and when they die. Okay. Great. Now, the conversation today is more complicated. I'll tell you why. Today, most of us, don't have a cow in our backyards. Our landlords would not be happy. We get milk from large farms. On the farms, they have many different cows that they shecht, right? Many different cows that they milk, I should say, excuse me. All the milk from these cows is mixed together, right? And then it is shipped to the Delwood factory, and you end up, right, then you have your milk. Beautiful, wonderful. I know for sure that there's a chunk of these cows that are treifas, no? Statistics would tell me that there gotta be some, correct? No one's gonna disagree, some of these cows are non-kosher, or treifs. Now, in order for the milk to be kosher, I need that once it's mixed together, I need that the treif milk is batel b'shishim. No? I need to know that there's 60 times more kosher milk than treif milk. This creates a very big problem drinking milk at all today. Because I check lungs of cows. Why? Because I'm worried that there's a 10% likelihood that they're going to be treif. 10% is more than 1/60. 1/60 is 1.6 and change percent, right? So 10% is more than 1.6%. That much I learned in third grade. So if that's the case, so I'm checking my lungs and my cows because, well, 10% is going to be treif. Well, hold it, man. If 10% is going to be treif, that means you shouldn't be drinking any milk today. So something's got to go. Either don't check the lungs, right, or don't drink milk.
Just to clarify, this point would have been, this argument would have been valid even before we found out that all the animals...
Correct. Right? In other words, this is, once Rav Schechter found out about this, he started thinking about the milk question more seriously. And he says, whoa, they mix all the milk together. That, they know. 45% of the milk that we get comes from farms that have more than 500 cows on them. That's a lot. Right? 500 cows is a lot of cows. Now, so what's going to happen? Right? Can I assume that the treif milk is batel b'shishim? I can't. Because I know that there is more than 1.6% that's not in kosher. Now, by the way, there's a write-up on the back of these sheets from Gil's student's blog. He gives you the whole literature about this. It's in English. Just because it's in English doesn't mean it's easy to understand. Right? That's the introduction. But we got a serious problem. Because what's the heter to drink the milk? Yeah. Can you speak louder? Right? So, what's the heter to drink the milk? So, some suggest, right? We'll talk about, if you read here, Reb Zalman Nechemya Goldberg has a suggestion that we look at each individual cow. And we consider each individual cow kosher until proven otherwise. Right? If there's only one cow left in the world, that cow is kosher. Therefore, if they all get blah blah. In other words, basically what I'm saying, says Reb Zalman Nechemya, is you're right, you're mixing everything together, but each cow I had to determine is kosher, no? If I'd have only one cow and I milk it, I would paskin because of the chazaka, or because of the other reason we gave before, that the milk is kosher. I have one cow. So now, right? Each cow, the second they milked it, I paskin that amount of milk is, that milk is kosher. So then if I mix it up later on after, it doesn't become treif. That's the argument. Now, we have Usher Weiss, says, whoa, one second. It doesn't become treif, but the fact is, statistically speaking, you know, there's more than 1/60 of treifus in this milk. So how can you drink it, no? So Reb Usher Weiss has a wild idea. Reb Usher Weiss, by the way, is an unbelievable person. He's now the rabbi of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital in Yerushalayim. This idea of Reb Usher Weiss is found in his sefer on Chumash called Minchas Asher. It's also found in his recently published Tshuvos called Minchas Asher. He has two pieces about the kashrus of milk today. Simen Lametes and Simen Mem. His argument is, ready? Okay, you're not going to like this. Rove is not based on statistics. The concept in halacha of following a majority has nothing to do with statistical reality. Let me give you an example. There's a halacha like this, that if I find a baby in town, a foundling, right, what's the official term? You find a foundling, right? You find a baby, so you follow the majority of people in town. If rove of the people in town are Jews, the baby's Jewish. Rove of the people in town are non-Jews, the baby's non-Jewish. Right? Nice, simple din. Happens all the time, I mean. Like, it happens. Fine, that's the halacha. So now, let's say I have a town that 60% of the inhabitants are Jews, 40% are non-Jews, right? So far, so good. I find the baby. Is the baby Jewish? Good? Yeah. We follow rove. Let's say I find 10 babies. Can all those 10 babies get together and make a minion? Well, they're babies, so they don't make a minion, right? But can they? If I would follow statistics, I'd say, 1 second, you know for sure, based on statistics, that four of these are probably going to be, yeah, we don't know for sure because it's like the flipping of the coin issue. It's possible that 10 out of 10 are Jews, possible that 10 out of 10 are non-Jews, right? But Rove tells me that for each individual baby, I paskin is Jewish. But statistics would say, well, only 6 of them are really Jewish and you don't have a minion, no? Yet I say that we follow the Rove and each child is presumed Jewish. Says Rav Asher Weiss, this teaches me that we don't follow statistics by Rove. And Rove is not statistics. Rove is a halachic determination, not based on statistics.
Didn't we already know this from the famous 3 pieces of meat, and one of them is not kosher? You can eat all 3.
So that's a din of Bittul Barov. Right? Bittul Barov is not the same concept of halacha harov. It's based on other sources, but yes, but no. Right? The fact is, right, it's a machlokas rishon, if you can eat all 3 pieces of meat. But those who assume that you can eat all 3 pieces of meat assume that there's some transformative process that it becomes kosher. Right, so I see a very similar idea from there. Absolutely, yeah. The halacha says, I follow the majority of the town. Once I follow the majority of the town, so that means everyone who's found is going to be Jewish, because the majority is Jewish, but I don't say that the statistics continue to govern the halachic determination afterwards. Basically, I make a psach at one point, you're Jewish, you're Jewish. So far, so good? He says also that we don't follow statistics, because if I'd follow statistics, I'd have to slice things. Well, 1 second, most people in town are Jews. 60% are Jews. Well, why should I follow 60%? Let's say your town has an all-men's college, no? In the town. And there's 2,000 Jewish men, right? Well, the baby was not produced by a Jewish man, because, right, well, it doesn't matter. The issue is the mother of the baby, right? So do I look, I should really look at only the women in town, not at all the inhabitants of the town. And even the women, I should only look at the women of childbearing age, no? If I'd be using statistics, wouldn't I break it down that way? What? That were pregnant or could be, and okay, but and there are better ways. You don't look at all the people in town, correct?
What if there were only male Jews?
And female Jews? So the halacha, says Rav Asher Weiss, an amazing thing. He thinks the halacha is you follow Rove. And Rove tells me you look at the Jews in town. How many Jews, how many non-Jews? You count them.
Even if there were no female Jews.
Right.
He would actually say that.
It's kind of wild, no?
Yes.
So no, so I think if there'd be no female Jews, no. But let's say there are no female Jews of childbearing age. You need some females, okay. You need some female Jews. So now, this basically leads him to the conclusion that we do not follow statistics. In other words, what I am going to do is I'm going to say, you know what, this cow, when it gives off its milk, it's kosher. The milk is kosher. I know based on statistics that won't be bottle, but no. The fact is, I do not play with statistics. Isn't what makes my determination. That is basically his argument. It's interesting. He's then bothered. Someone asked him a question. He says, 1 second. You yourself, Paskin, that it's forbidden to a Kohen to enter a hospital. Why? Because based on statistics, right, odds are there's going to be one corpse in the hospital, right? A large hospital, let's say, but whatever the case is, right? You don't know for sure. Why don't they say that we don't follow statistics, and each person we assume is alive, and then you can go into the hospital? So he wants to say that's a different type of question. The question by going to the hospital, the shadow's on the building, as opposed to over here, the shadow's on the cow. Right? That's basically his argument. It's wild. It's a wild idea that Rove is not based on statistics. Rav Schechter did not like this idea at all. Rav Schechter went to speak to Rabbi Yoshev about this question of the milk. And Rebbe Yoshev gave him some answer. I don't remember exactly what Rebbe Yoshev said to him. I think Rav Shech didn't really understand the answer. Then people came to him a few weeks later and asked him the same question. He said, well, why are you asking me this question? I already said it's mutter, and Rav Shech just didn't like my answer, but it's mutter. Something to that effect. Whatever it means. I don't know. I don't know exactly how to deal with this question, but this is a very serious matter. But everyone points out that Shulchan Aruch has to hold this way. Let's just show you one case in Shulchan Aruch. Here, Simon Pei Aleph Se'if Beis. You see there's Simon Pei Aleph Se'if Beis. You see there's what I would call a 12-point font. That's the Mechaber, and then like the 10-point font is the Ramah. So the second set of 10-point fonts, it begins Hagos, the first word on the line. Right? It's four lines on the bottom, right? So the Ramah writes, Im yesh shishim behemos be'eder. There are 60 animals in the flock. V'lo yadin bevadai shecholav min atreifa, hi yosei mecholav achas hacheros. In other words, sometimes you have one cow that produces more milk than the others. We don't know that the trefa is a better milk producer than the other cows. So Amrinan Mistoma Ika Shishim Umoter. We assume that probably there's 60 times and it's mutter. In other words, I have a flock with 61 cows. One is non-kosher. I assume, well, there's going to be Shishim and it's permitted. That's what it says. Now, problem. Even the other cows, some of them are presumably non-kosher, because, right, that's why we check their lungs. Even so, the Rambam is confident enough to tell me that the milk is all going to be kosher. In other words, I don't take into account that statistical possibility that they are, that there's some non-kosher mixed in here. That's what the Rambam says. This Rambam is basically the source of the permission to drink milk today. Rabbi Asher Weiss, in his Tshuva, quotes Gemara here in Zvachim, the bottom of the page. It's a little technical to go through, but but that Gemara also indicates the same type of idea, that we are looking at this animal itself. Kosher! Right now it's kosher, right? Siskel died, right? Siskel, Ebert, one of them died. Right, so thumbs up, thumbs down, right? They both died. That's unfortunate.
No, but one of them died very recently.
Right? We're going to look at the milk, and we're going to go thumbs up or thumbs down. Right? And once I do that, even I mix it up after, it remains kosher. That's basically what we have to assume if we want to continue drinking milk. But we now understand, though, why Rav Schechter says, whoa. Right? It's very hard to rely on a halachic construct that contradicts an entire school of study. Right? Basically, this goes against all of statistics. Maybe that's the halacha. I don't know. But it's hard to accept the fact that this is going to be kosher when the fact is it's not batul b'shishim. It is a very big problem. There might be other ways of going back to what we said before, that maybe we check for stuff that's technically chumras, and maybe all these cows are really going to be kosher anyway. It says in Shulchan Aruch, let's say I didn't check the lungs of the cow. Let's say I shech the cow, and I hang the lungs up in the shlachtos, and then some animal comes and steals the lungs. So I never check the lungs. Can I eat the animal? Yeah. Shulchan Aruch says, yeah. Right? Because we assume that checking the lungs is only a din d'rabbanan. Right, this whole thing. So, that's another factor to include in this whole discussion. It could be that all these animals are technically kosher. Anyway, that goes back to the Shagasari that we said before. But, Yontav HaShavuos is coming up. We drink milk. It's just worth thinking about this whole very modern question about whether it's permitted to drink milk.
So, how widespread is Rav Schechter's attitude?
I don't know anyone besides Rav Schechter and his immediate family who don't drink milk because of it. And not all members of Schechter's immediate family don't drink milk. Rav Schechter tells his daughters to drink milk. In most cases, Again, the feeling is especially in pregnancy. If you are not drinking milk, your bones can deteriorate more. He's worried about that. I think one of his sons drinks milk. I think his other sons don't drink milk. Again, I don't think he doesn't tell people not to drink milk. But it's well known that he himself does not drink milk. So how does he understand the Rama? So I think he's assuming that this is only when I have a small scale operation. I have 60 I have 60 cows in the flock. I'm milking some of those. So ultimately, I'm passing on each one. I don't know for sure that they all got mixed up. The case in the Rama is not that they mix all the milk together, right? The case in the Rama is that one of the that all of them are making cheese, right? One of them is found to be non-kosher, right? So, right, etc. That's the case.
Yeah, I thought Rav Schechter had a problem with the way that they manufacture milk today, in the sense that it gets mixed at a certain time.
It gets mixed up. They take all the milk from the cows and they mix it all together in a big tanker and they ship it out. So there's definitely some trephis in there. Statistics will indicate that there's definitely some trephis.
And was there a different manufacturing process?
It used to be, remember, they didn't have refrigeration, so they couldn't ship milk in a large container from here to there. Everything was a small operation. It's a small operation, so I could paskin on this one cow in front of me that it's kosher.
Even though 10% of the milk in America was kosher.
But I vote up on the one cow. But once I have this whole mixture, right, and I know for sure that some of the milk is a problem, so what gives me a right to vote up on the whole mixture when, right, it contradicts the statistical reality? That's basically the question. Right? In other words, this really has nothing to do with what happened in Johannesburg.
Would Rav Schechter then say, okay, if I take milk from one cow, I can drink it. If I take milk from two cows and pour them into one glass together, then I can't drink it. Because statistically,
No, because remember, when I take milk from two cows, I still don't have. Notice you're saying I do have. I have the same statistical problem. Is that true? No. Oh, one second. Each cow itself I could drink. I know the cow. I know Elsie and I know Shmerel.
Right.
So I could drink both of them. Right? But at some point, I know for sure.
Them all together, and suddenly you can't...
How is that?
Right, that's really what he's saying.
Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
So you're making a logical argument. You're saying, one second, but... Right, if it's good enough for one cow, right, and it's good enough for two and three, where do you... Right, at some point...
Yeah.
Right, you can't say that because there are more cows, you can't say it becomes trafe. But we still have the question that what's the permission to drink milk when I know for sure that it's not batel b'shishim. Okay. And you have to say something along those lines.
He's saying almost the same thing also
with what?
He and Rizal and Benjamin Goldberg are saying almost the same thing.
They're very similar. Yeah. I don't know why Gil's student broke them down in different categories.
It's because who said what?
Okay, I mean, basically, this is all I know about this topic of conversation. Thank you very much for coming.